Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. The long-anticipated 2016 presidential election is just around the corner on November 8th. And while the race at the top of the ticket is getting most of the attention, there are important down-ticket races that may well have a more direct impact on the lives of Pennsylvanians. Among them is Pennsylvania's race for the 5th Congressional District. Last week, we talked with Democrat Kareth Strano Taylor, who is taking a second shot at unseating Republican incumbent Glenn Thompson, who joins us today. Thompson first won office in 2008. A former health care administrator, he's running for a fifth term in Congress. Thank you so much for joining us.
Patty, thank you. What a privilege and honor to be able to be with you.
Why are you running for a fifth term in Congress?
Well, to be able to, first of all, just once again, thank you to you, this wonderful university, WPSU, for providing this service. That's why I like to support WPSU, is because of, I think we have a shared interest in terms of supporting education and information, and you all do that in a great way. Why am I running? To be able to continue what I have accomplished in terms of listening, leading, and making a difference. And I've when I talk with people, I'm very clear. I did that this morning, actually, in a round table in Bellefonte, that I'm not here to bring Washington home. Quite frankly, you wouldn't want it here. But I'm here to be able to take your needs, your concerns, your issues, and most importantly, your homegrown solutions to Washington to make a difference in the lives of the citizens I serve directly as their member of Congress, but also all Pennsylvanians and all Americans. And we can be rather proud of what we've been able to accomplish, whether it's been in the areas of jobs or education or supporting our troops or our veterans, the environment. And so I'm running again to continue to listen, to lead, and to make a difference.
You have sponsored 52 pieces of legislation in your 8 years in Congress. Give us an idea of what you consider your greatest accomplishments in the 8 years that you've served.
Oh, that's challenging. Let me start with what we've done for a tremendous crisis that we've had in this country, and that is the suicide rate among our military. And that's personal for me, as my wife and I are the proud parents of a wounded warrior. Our son Logan continues to serve in the United States Army after he rehabbed and med boarded and went into from frontline military to military intelligence. But he brought to my attention the suicide rate of his. Well, he talked about his buddies who, when the 3rd Infantry Division returned from Iraq, how many committed suicide both at home and on post. And so we did something about that. I worked with the Department of Defense, reached out to the Surgeon General, and I prepared legislation to really expand telemedicine. Telemedicine that broke down the bureaucratic barriers that we've always had. And that's helped. It's not been the only thing that's brought down the suicide rate of making care more accessible, but it's a part of what has helped. Certainly my support for education, both a strong supporter of the sciences, working here on the university with our faculty and administration, but also our secondary and elementary schools, where I helped write the bill that repealed No Child Left Behind and replaced that with the Every Student Succeeds Act. And most recently, the Career and Technical Education Bill that I wrote, it passed unanimously out of the Education Workforce Committee. It passed 405-5 out of the House, and it looks like it hopefully will sail through the Senate and make its way to the president's desk, strengthening career and technical education.
I want to follow up on some of that, especially the education component of that. But first, polls consistently show that voters rank the economy as their top concern. Unemployment in the nation stands at 4.9%. Unemployment in Pennsylvania is 5.7%. In your district, the 5th district, which is the largest and the least populated in the state of Pennsylvania, it stands at 8.1%. How are you addressing this ongoing economic anxiety, despite the fact that there has been, especially on the national front, some good news, namely an increase in household income and a steady march upward for the job creation index?
Well, many different ways. And I've been a leader, actually, on access to jobs and job training. Certainly not just for this congressional district, which is 24% of the landmass of the state, much of WPSU's listening area, proud to say. But Specifically, one of the very first pieces of legislation that I helped to write was the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. The president signed that into law 2-3 years ago. That basically transformed how we do job training. And it's the job training that individuals who are unemployed or underemployed can get access to through the career links. Really vertically integrates job creators, business and industry with that program, so that we're actually training people to good paying jobs that are sitting open and available today. Certainly the career and technical, the piece of legislation I previously made reference to, strengthening career and technical education for the 21st century, that bill serves not just our children, our youth that are in high schools, it actually begins to promote career awareness in middle school, pushes into the middle schools career awareness of different opportunities. It integrates business and industry in a way like we have not seen to this point. It helps to reduce the stigma. It really provides an exit strategy out of for all people out of first of all, out of unemployment, underemployment, but also out of poverty by providing great access to job training.
But how disturbed are you by the fact that Pennsylvania ranks 42nd in the nation in terms of unemployment and that the district stands at 8.1%, which is much higher
concerned.
Than national
The number
average.
One issue is always jobs, and that's why the different pieces of legislation that that I work on. I just championed a piece of legislation successfully through the House of Representatives that, you know, to basically protect on the energy side, the mineral side, those subsurface owners who, and that has been a great boon to Pennsylvania. That's helped us reduce our underemployment and our unemployment significantly. And so my piece of legislation, which passed unanimously without objection out of the Natural Resource Committee, very bipartisan bill, all my legislation is, that to help protect that industry in terms of protecting the subsurface, the owners of subsurface rights, private property owners. A lot of businesses in our congressional district come from those types of industries. But we do need to look at, you know, what are the burdens that job creators are carrying? There's one right now that I've worked on. And it's a sensitive issue. I get it because it does need to have an update. But the Department of Labor are imposing such a significant jump in the threshold for overtime. What we're seeing is employers preparing to downsize jobs. We're seeing nonprofits who just really can't complete their missions because of those changes. So what we need in terms of those regulations is a common sense approach, not a unilateral approach, something that's developed through the congressional process where we have hearings and we legislate as opposed to a bureaucrat, an unelected bureaucrat who decides to try to implement unilaterally some type of a regulation.
The reality, though, is that from 2013 to 2015, only 3% of proposed legislation actually passed into law. But you mentioned jobs and minerals, and so I'd like to talk a little bit about a new bipartisan bill known as the Reclaim Act. It was actually initiated by a Republican colleague of yours, Congressman Hal Rogers of Kentucky, and it would make $1 billion over 5 years available from the Abandoned Mine Reclamation Fund. Many say that this would be enormously important for Pennsylvania. As you know, 10 of the 16 counties that you represent have abandoned coal mines, in fact, over 5,000 of them, and 5,300 miles of streams that have been damaged because of runoff. That money would go to employ coal miners who are out of work to reclaim and clean these streams and these abandoned mines. This legislation has gone to the Natural Resources Committee, which you are on, but you haven't signed it. How come?
I'm opposed to it in its current form. I'm working with the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, who is the chief sponsor, Congressman Roger, a good guy, a very seasoned veteran member of Congress. But I am opposed to it in its current form. You're talking to the number one advocate for the abandoned mine land funds and the recovery of our watersheds. I'm the leading advocate in Washington for clean water because it's my responsibilities as chairman, and I'm in my third term as chairman of the Agriculture Subcommittee, which includes watersheds. The problem is this the major selling point on this bill is that people who formerly mine coal would be able to get access to job training. Well, we're already doing that. We already redid the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, or we passed that legislation. We're very close for the Senate to passing, hopefully, my bill, and the President signing by the end of the year the Career and Technical Education Bill. That's all. That's how you do job training.
And what about reclaiming the Reclaim Act
streams? Siphons money off of, if you read the legislation, the Reclaim Act siphons money off of cleaning up the environment to creating new duplicative job training programs. We need that money. There are, in Clearfield County alone, there are more abandoned mine sites than the state of New Mexico. I mean, when they talk about the Industrial Revolution, we should be very proud that the coal that fueled the Industrial Revolution was dug out of Pennsylvania, and specifically a lot of it out of the Pennsylvania 5th Congressional District. I want that money to go to cleaning up the environment. That's why I work with Trout Unlimited.
And this wouldn't? Because Trout Unlimited actually sponsored
it. I'm working with them, and I think they're starting to understand that we don't want to dilute our mission. Our mission is to clean up the environment. And so job training is important. You've heard me talk about that. But we're already approaching job training. Let's make sure that we administer the abandoned mine monies and get it out there specifically to clean up the environment. We don't need the other distractions that are part of this. And I'm actually working very closely with the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, who is the original sponsor, to refine the bill. We're in the process of talking so that we can make refinements so that we can truly
Can you outline what some of the refinements might be?
This is money that's been setting there. It's accruing interest. It's a huge sum of money. All of it came from the hard work of hardworking men and women who were coal miners. This was a fee that those individuals, their companies paid into.
And the idea
this.
Would be to put them back to work.
Well, we already have opportunities to put them back to work. That's the job training bills, one that's been in law and one that is, I think, will be in law by the end of the year. Somewhat confident of that, given how bipartisan and bicameral my legislation was. We need to focus on, and I've always been an advocate for having the administration release more of the money that it's sitting on. And so that we can fund these projects with Trout Unlimited and the Chesapeake Bay initiatives, all the great we got a lot of nonprofits, the businesses that are involved with this. We also have some commercial organizations, for profits, that are a part of this coalition as well. It's a collaborative work, and we're doing great things. We've recovered a lot of streams in Pennsylvania, but we have a lot more work to do, and we shouldn't be distracted from our mission of clean water.
We can't talk about jobs without talking about international trade agreements, which, as you know, have been a major talking point in this election. The Republican candidate for president, Donald Trump, is a major critic of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP. You're one of 218 members of Congress, 190 of them Republicans, who voted in June of 2015 to fast-track this controversial trade agreement. And I'm wondering, do you still support the TPP? And if not, why not?
Well, there's no such thing as fast-track. That's a term that's kind of out there on the air. What I supported was the Trade Promotional Act, the TPA, that basically for the first time allowed Congress to set the ground rules with the administration for trade, to make sure that we're protecting intellectual property, make sure we're preventing countries from influencing unfairly their currency, making sure that environmental laws, labor laws with our trade partners, that there's a fair and equitable level playing field there, and that our trade partners follow the rules, that we actually hold them to the rules that have been negotiated. And, you know, in my observation, that hasn't been done by administrations of both parties in the past.
Is the TPP a good deal, though?
I think it's getting close. It's getting very close. They're not quite where I want them to be on dairy, tell you the truth. Canada and New Zealand are kind of holding out on us. They have a supply management type of system in their countries, which really hurts our dairy farmers. Trade is extremely important, though, I would tell you, because of a trade issue right now in Russia, and we don't trade with Russia. Our dairy exports in this country are down 65%, just because You know, most of the world is angry with Russia because of their bad behavior, and Russia's mad at the rest of the world, and so they stopped buying milk from the European Union. So the European Union is now selling milk to markets where our farmers used to. And so because of that, that's how important trade is. Today, our dairy farmer, our dairy products, and just in Pennsylvania, your exports are down 65%, which means farmers are losing money with every gallon of milk that they produce. And so trade is very important, but you got to get it right, and you got to hold your trade partners' feet to the fire. And I would say I've heard Mr. Trump come around to speak sort of come more to my perspective that we need to do this trade right versus rejecting trade altogether.
And I want to follow up on that as well. But if you are just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia, and our guest is Republican Glenn G.T. Thompson. Thompson, a Penn State alum from rural central Pennsylvania, has a background in healthcare and is seeking a fifth term in Washington. Last week, we talked with his Democratic challenger, Brookville attorney Kara Strano Taylor. You can find that interview and this one on our website. Speaking of Donald Trump, back in May on NBC's Meet the Press, he said that the national minimum wage of $7.25 an hour is too low, and he frankly doesn't know how people are able to make it on that rate. He added that the states and not the federal government should make the decision, but then he said he'd like to see, quote, an increase of some magnitude. So I'm wondering, do you support raising the minimum wage, and if so, to what?
I support that that's a decision states need to make, because states have different economies and different markets, different types of industries, and that's where that's a tough decision. That's one that needs to be made there. I will say that I've looked at every time that minimum wage has been raised nationally in the past, within the past couple decades. The only exception of one, with the exception of one time, what we saw was the minimum threshold of what swept and qualified people as living in poverty went up. And that meant put more people technically, officially into poverty when we raise minimum wage, because when minimum wage tends to get paid in places where staples are sold, food, gas, those types of businesses. I don't think anyone who is a sole income producer for a family should ever make minimum wage. I that's why I've worked so hard to make job training so accessible, so that those individuals in particular, why would we want anyone to make minimum wage no matter what minimum wage is? That's just morally wrong. And so I want more than that. I want better than that. And I've been very successful at actually legislating and changing programs, making a difference in this nation where people who find themselves stuck in minimum wage would be able to get access to training to get a better job and more opportunity.
Your opponent is supporting an increase to $10.10, which is actually what President Obama is also pushing.
It's going to push more people into poverty. And like I said, of the numerous times in the past decade or maybe longer, I have to go back and look. The only exception, I think, was back in 2008, where they did not increase, and there were a lot of crazy financial things because of Wall Street abuses. The amount of money that qualified you as living in poverty did not increase that year, but every other year that I looked at, it did. And that the thing is, though, you know, job training, access to job training, that's true and tried. That shouldn't be political at all. We should all agree that given access to great training and jobs that are sitting open today that pay much better than minimum wage and put you on a career ladder, and that's what my legislation does. It restores the rungs on the ladder of opportunity.
You'll be serving your third term as co-chairman of the Bipartisan Congressional Career and Technical Education Caucus, which you've been talking quite a bit about. So I'd like to ask you an education question. Rising student debt is a national concern.
Right.
Some new reports suggest that drastic cuts in state funding of higher education accounts for about 2/3 of the rising cost of college. And of course, that's a state budget issue. But what are you prepared to do on the national level to make college more affordable?
That's something I work on every day, Patty. I'm a senior member on the Education Workforce Committee. There is some likelihood that I actually, if reelected in the 115th Congress, will become the chairman of the Higher Education Subcommittee, having served on that committee and again, being a leader on in education and workforce. Affordability is something I do work on, starting with looking at what are the unfunded mandates that were put upon universities just like this one that we're sitting on campus today. Those unfunded mandates, if they, have we really looked at are those mandates necessary? Is there basic health, safety? Are there issues? And what is the cost of compliance? Because the cost of compliance when it comes to regulations is significant. And where does that go? That goes right to tuition. Now, I would also say it's the states have had budget issues, but I just this morning I was reading and once again reaffirming that enrollment in a lot of universities, because of the demographics of the millennials generation being smaller, that in the trend is that enrollments are going down, which means there's less tuition because you don't have enrollment, and therefore those costs. Those overhead costs get pushed on to the remaining students. I just talked with a parent last night up in Northeast Pennsylvania in Erie County about that very issue and about how tuition and their child, unfortunately for them, doesn't go to Penn State. One of them doesn't. The other one does. But that's part of this too. Now, here's what I like about being at of our university here. It's a worldwide campus. You know, we are reaching out well beyond the walls of this. That's the fastest growing part of Penn State. So I think tele-education, there are some things that we can do to help reduce cost, make education more accessible, more affordable. I think people honestly have to have good choices too, and that's why I work hard on career and technical education because, creates a little competition, which is a good thing. It tends to drive up quality and drive down costs, those are the types of things I work on every day.
I want to switch gears I'd like to follow on that up on that, but there's not time. So I'd like to switch gears to probably one of the most partisan issues, and of course that is climate change. Former Republican Congressman Bob Inglis says he represented South Carolina that climate change is not only real, but that addressing it is bedrock conservatism. And according to a Yale and George Mason University study, the number of Americans who believe in climate change and that we should do something about it has doubled in the past 2 years, so that today 59% of Republicans feel that way. Interestingly, in Congress, 59% of House members deny the scientific consensus around climate change, and 70% of members of Senate. Bob Inglis says that the problem is the way environmentalists and the left frame the problem, that it's framed about the dangers rather than the opportunities. So I wonder, how do you respond to the idea that if the focus were on free enterprise solutions rather than the government regulating or international treaties, that more Republicans would be on board with tackling the problem?
Well, Bob Inglis is a friend of mine. I was just with him, actually. He stopped to see me about that must have been about 3 weeks ago. He's doing well in his after Congress career. He's doing some good things and enjoying life. Here's the thing: climate change is real. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The climate has always changed. We live in a valley, and I don't know how many times I've said this. It was shaped by huge glaciers, and if we dig around deep enough, we can find evidence of sea fossils. And so, climate change is continuous. I would argue that another reason maybe there's a differential is that it is that perhaps there are those who focus on long-term studies that really are not able to, nobody's going to be around to prove. And I think that makes it difficult for the general public to trust. And most of the general public has rejected that. Versus looking at the short-term consequences. It's absolutely what should be done. That's why I'm so proud that I for some time now in Congress, have been my leadership position with agriculture. I am responsible for the largest carbon sinks in the world, and those are healthy forests. And I'm responsible as the chairman of conservation subcommittee as well. It's conservation and forestry and watersheds. On the conservation side, that we're developing crops that actually do a better job of taking potassium chemicals from the ground and carbon from the air And actually, if we get that carbon out of the air through healthy forests and through cover crops and through different types of commodities that we planted, we're actually manufacturing topsoil by taking carbon out of the air, which is a really good thing. And so I think that part of it is have been those who have really poised this argument so rigidly and not open to other perspectives. My commitment is to cleaning the environment up. I lead on that, and I probably do more for taking carbon out of the air than almost anyone at this point, given my leadership in terms of promoting healthy forest management practices and promoting good conservation.
Let me just say the 2016 marked the second consecutive year that earned the title of hottest year on record. And if you look at Republicans, we have Republicans like Senator Lindsey Graham, who says climate change is real and that we must do
Lindsey Graham,
something. And Bob Inglis says,
I can't speak for Bob Inglis. I can only speak in terms of my work and my leadership. I've learned, I've listened.
I think there is a mismatch between constituents' views and the positions issues. Of their representatives in Congress.
I think there's a disagreement on strategies. I mean, there are folks who firmly want to come and put a tax on your light switch, some type of a carbon-based tax. To me, that's wrong. When I look at in my work that I do to serve those folks who are struggling to make ends meet, those who are living in poverty, you know, to put a tax on a light switch, that is not the approach to go. When there are other alternatives, and quite frankly, I'm very proud of the progress that we've made under my leadership in terms of cleaning the environment up, not just our watersheds, but quite frankly, like I said, being responsible for some of the largest carbon sinks in the world.
So many issues to talk about and not enough time. So I'll leave it here. In your opinion, what's at stake in this election? And if reelected, what will be your top priority when the 115th Congress convenes?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just really appreciate the support that I've been seeing. You know, last 2 years ago, we won with 64% of the vote. Since that time, obviously, the amount of the constituent services, the legislation I've led with, the outcomes that we've achieved, whether it's been education, secondary, elementary, career and tech at higher education, whether it's jobs, whether it's been serving our veterans and those in our military, just a vast things. People with disabilities. Most recently, a piece of legislation was brought to me by a local attorney, Amos Goodall, that got it through the House, and now it's in actual form. It's already passed the Senate. So. But there's a lot of work left to be done, and jobs is certainly the number one industry, or number one goal, the number one need. Also, stabilizing, saving Medicare and Social Security. I've helped lead on some specific things that we have gotten the president to sign, specifically with Social Security disability. Believe it or not, felon fugitives were getting Social Security checks. So we've done some things to stabilize, but we have a lot more work to do in those areas. So, and I look forward to earning the opportunity to continue to work and serve for the citizens of the Pennsylvania 5th Congressional District, to be able to listen, to lead, and to continue to make a difference.
And on that note, we are out of time. Thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was Republican Representative Glenn Thompson of Pennsylvania's 5th Congressional District. He's seeking a fifth term in Washington. Last week, we spoke with his Democratic challenger, Kara Strano-Taylor. Both interviews will be archived on our website, wpsu.org/take note. Election Day is Tuesday, November 8th. Most polling places open at 7 a.m. and close at 8 p.m. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.